You're listening to the Word Bros Podcast. TheWordBros.com. Hey, are you listening to this on Spotify? No? Well, you know what? You can be. Welcome to an all-new Word Bros on Spotify. That's right. We're making moves. Kevin and I are doing super awesome things. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Bob.
Yes. And yes, the Word Bros right now, we are on Spotify. We are streaming every episode, all 100 episodes, because this is, Kevin, our 100th episode.
Wow, we've done 100 episodes of this?
Yeah, granted, it took a really long time because we've taken some sizable breaks, but since the pandemic has started, we've been rolling through. Our first episode back was episode 69. So from the pandemic starting to now, we've done many episodes, because I don't feel like doing the math because I just don't want
41.
To. 41.
Which is weird.
Yes, we've done 41 episodes. So yeah, man, so this is episode 100. We are on Spotify and real quick, just house cleaning. Get out of the way before we get to Bob Quinn, who's our guest this week, who is wonderful. If you go to thewordbros.com, that is our website, thewordbros.com, in the upper right-hand corner of your screen, you will see a little link that says buy our books. If you click on that link, that will take you to the Word Bros shop.
We have a Word Bros shop?
We do. We have a place where you can buy all of our books.
Well, damn. I mean, what can I buy on the Word Bros shop, Bob?
You can buy Metal Shark Bro Volume 1. Buy Metal Shark Bro Volume 2. You can buy Ninja Nuns. You can buy the various covers we have of Ninja Nuns. Lana Kangas's cover, Jason Copeland's cover. I need to put Josh Hood's cover up there. I'll do that before this airs. And you can also buy the Stairway Anthology from Image Comics. That's right. All of our books, and there'll be more merchandise being added as we go. All that stuff is up right now on the Word Bros shop. I believe it's like shop. You know what? I'm not going to say what it is because I don't know what it is. I think it's shop. Word Bros. shopwordbros.square.site, because it's a square site, because I didn't want to pay for anything, because I didn't want to put up a web store and have to pay for it if nobody was going to fucking buy anything. So yes, so it's shopthewordbros.square.site, and that is where you can go to get your Word Bro merchandise, or just go to thewordbros.com and click on that little link, and that'll take you right to the Word Bros shop.
Wow. That is almost as exciting as the guest we have on the show today.
Yeah, we have a good guest today.
We have Bob Quinn, yes, who is the artist of two, not one, but two Marvel books.
Yeah.
He's done Champions.
Yes, which is a wonderful book. Check that out.
And he's doing X-Men.
Well, so no, he's doing Way of X.
Way of X, okay.
Way of X. He's not doing X-Men. That's a little different.
There's too many X-Men titles.
He is doing what? Who's the writer of Way of X, though? Superstar.
Cy Spurrier
is great.
Who did Coda, who we've sung his praises and glories about Coda.
Yeah, he's a good writer, man. So you know this book will be in good hands. And Bob is hot. He's hot. And I don't mean that like attractiveness or his career, but I mean, we are going into this interview hot. So get ready for it. Bob Quinn right now.
It's a conversational show. We talk to you, and then you answer questions. Like, what's your favorite ice cream? Count Bobula.
It's vanilla, because I'm the most boring person on the planet. How you like that?
That's a lie.
That is true. That is absolutely the truth. Yes.
Really? Now, do you have, like, a favorite kind of vanilla, like French vanilla or vanilla bean, or are you just a straight vanilla guy?
Or Madagascar vanilla? Are you fancy like Ram V?
Oh, my friends, let me tell you something. We have, of course... down here in Southern California. Where are you guys located? One's in Virginia, one's in...
Ohio.
Yes.
Ohio.
I'm in Cincinnati, yes.
He's in Cincinnati and I'm in Williamsburg,
Virginia. Out here on the West Coast, we have a thing called Salt and Straw, which is like this... Apparently it's like this crazy lady that runs it. She's like some sort of just like dictator when it comes to
an
like
ice cream
running
dictator.
She's like an ice cream dictator, yeah.
You have the Mr. Sinister of ice cream.
Exactly. She's doing all kinds of experiments of a genetic variety on these ice creams. No, so she's apparently like a crazy person, but she makes like these really bizarre ice cream flavors. So it'll be like bone marrow and jelly bean and like, you know, burnt honey and lavender and shit, right? And then, can I swear? I'm sorry.
Yes,
totally. You're fine. Boy, fucking shit. So she makes these weird ass ice cream flavors, and like, so, and like, that's why you go there, to get this weird shit. But like, when I go there, I'm like, well, do they have a vanilla? So I go, and they have a thing called double fold vanilla. What does it mean? I don't know. But you know what? Tastes real good.
So it's, you don't know what it means, but you just like it. Like, there's
just nothing. No, I like it. It is a super vanilla-y flavor. I'm very pleased by it.
That's it. Well, what is salted straw, though?
I'm Googling now, it right now. I'm Googling it right now. Salt and straw.
Salt and straw. All
right.
Yeah.
It checks out. It says it's run by some crazy lady who lives.
Yeah, right there. It's on the Wikipedia page. It says,
this woman is crazy. Okay, cool. Salt and straw. It ships nationwide. So if we're interested, we can have it delivered to us here wherever we are.
This episode brought to you by Salt and Straw.
It's vegan indulgence, dairy-free decadence. Now, are you vegan? Is that why you like it, or do you get the milk stuff? Like,
no, I get the milk stuff. I'm from Wisconsin originally, dude.
Okay. I didn't see that on your bio, so I missed the Wisconsin. It's not there.
Don't advertise it or anything. Okay. You know.
So yeah. So Salt and Straw will deliver ice cream to your inbox. Now, what you should do is, if you ever come to Cincinnati, Ohio, we have two local ice cream places. We have Grater's, which is like the fancy pants ice cream, which has been around for a really long time. It's super expensive. They sell it in grocery stores. It's like $12 for like a regular size thing, but it's super fancy and delicious. But then they have the working man's ice cream, the ice cream of like the common man, called United
the Dusty Roads ice cream, if you will. Yes,
it's the Dusty Roads of ice creams. It's okay. The son of a plumber. Like, you get it at a gas station where you buy cigarettes and beer, and it is amazing. It's the best ice cream I've ever had.
It's better than Grater's.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It dominates Grater's.
It cuts a this much ice cream too.
This ice cream seizes the means of production, and I love it.
Yes.
Beautiful.
It's wonderful. Like, they have this flavor called peanut butter and chocolate chip. It's vanilla ice cream with like.
Okay, now I'm back on board, because those get a little crazy for me.
It's vanilla ice cream with like thin like layers of peanut butter in it with like chocolate shavings. It's the greatest and best thing you'll ever have, because it's salty and sweet. And oh man, like, I've gained at least like 10 pounds from just
on this ice cream.
Yeah, just from living here. Like, it's crazy.
From the working man's ice cream.
Well, that's because Kevin, I'm a working man, and I don't eat no fancy man's ice cream. I go where the people go to get ice cream with their lottery tickets and their cigarettes and their beer and their
hard
chips.
Times
I go
ice
to
cream.
That yeah. place. Yeah.
I eat cigarette ice cream. That's what I do. What? That's working man's ice cream.
Do they make that at this fancy Salt and Straw cigarette ice cream?
It's no, because look, this is ice cream of the proletariat, people. All right?
Exactly. I don't eat that bourgeoisie ice cream. Now, I got to tell you, Bob, you are already one of my favorite interviews we've ever done on this podcast. Like,
oh, thank goodness.
Like, you're wonderful. Like, you just come on guns blazing. Like, you come off kind of nonchalant because you're eating dinner. You're like, I don't give a fuck about this. But you got the A material, so I'm super into it. Like,
I was super late with dinner. I'm so sorry, you guys. I'm super hungry.
I thought he was eating cereal at first. It says Count Bobula. I was like, he's eating cereal? It's on brand? He's got it all together.
Now what's for dinner? What's for dinner in the Quinn household today?
I don't know what this is. It's some kind of chicken thing that my wife made. It was done in the slow cooker.
Oh,
a lot of exotic spices and rice. It's incredible.
Now, is it an actual slow cooker? Or do you guys have one of those like Instapot things? Is it an Instapot?
We have both.
Oh, she can't hide that Marvel money, son. Look at you, baby.
He's gonna choke, Bobby. Don't do that to the man. He's our new favorite guest, and you're gonna kill him on the first time he comes on.
This Marvel money, there's nothing I can't buy. We got Viking stoves. We got a Wolf stove right next to it. We don't give a shit. We want the Pottery Barn in the pandemic. More expensive. Incredible.
That's hot to death.
Yes. Yeah.
No, no. One of them, in my defense, one of them was a wedding gift. So, okay, okay. You know, we didn't.
Which is a typical
we demanded wedding... our rich relatives pay for it.
Which is a typical wedding gift thing. You always get a crock pot or a slow cooker for a wedding gift that's like that and a toaster and a blender and you're good, you know?
Exactly. That's, yeah. That is literally our shelf of crap that we got from the wedding.
Now, are you recently married, Bob, or have you been married for quite some time?
Well, we've been married for like 10 years and we were together for we've been together forever.
Okay. So you're saying
I can't remember a time when we weren't together.
So you're saying this is a quality slow cooker if it still works 10 years into the marriage, then is what you're saying.
Oh yeah. Well, I don't know which one she used because we got All right, here's where the Marvel money comes in.
One's from
we
the have Marvel two slow money, cookers. I was going to say one's from that Marvel money.
One's Marvel money and one is regular people money.
Nightcrawler brought his slow cooker. So well,
that's right. He bamfed in. Put down the slow cooker, said, you know, happy vending, and took off.
Happy vending.
Congratulations. Bam.
That's wonderful.
Okay, so for those of you not familiar with Bob's work, he worked on Champions.
Yes,
so correct. Tell us a little bit about that for people who don't know what Champions are, which people usually know what Champions are. But
people, you gotta know what Champions are. The Champions are the champions of the Marvel Universe. No, it's a team of young superheroes ready to take on the world. We got Miss Marvel. We've got Braun. We've got Viv Vision. We've got who don't we have? We got Miles Morales. We've got Nova. We've got Red Locust, Starling. Snowguard, everybody's in this thing.
Amadeus Cho is in there, right?
Amadeus Cho, yes, correct.
Because this wasn't the series started originally by Mark Waid, I guess. Didn't he like kind of kick this thing off?
He did, I believe, but it was like a relaunched mini that they did where Eve Ewing was writing it and then Simone DeMeo was drawing it. Okay. and then the plague hit,
yeah,
which kind of screwed up everything. So Simone had to go and do what he had to do, and then when all of a sudden they were like, hey, we're back on, Simone, what do you want to do? He's like, guys, I'm gone. I can't finish this. So they called me because nice. The reason you call Bob because Bob is extremely reliable.
And Bob is talking about himself in third person, which I did.
And, they also said, who needs a slow cooker? I think Bob Quinn needs a slow cooker.
This guy looks hungry.
look how skinny he is, this poor man.
This is not a standard comic book artist. This needs to put on about 58 pounds, this guy. So, yeah, so they called me. I got to finish up the book. I had, like, the best time of my life, and now it's on shelves. People, you got to go pick it up. It's great.
Well, I was telling my daughter, I was like, oh, I got to, you know, put you to bed. I'll run downstairs. I have an interview. She's like, oh, who are you interviewing? And I said, Bob Quinn. And she's like, who's that? And I said, he's an artist. He did Champions. And she's like, well, who's in that? And she reads comics, but she's not up to date on, like, the new hot stuff. And I was like, well, Miss Marvel is with the big hand. She's like, oh, that's cool. And I was like, Miles Morales. She's like, awesome. So after Miles Morales, like, you get the punch card. You're good to go. Like, you get to draw the hottest guy in comics, right? Everybody loves Miles. Oh,
yeah, he was phenomenal. But here's the thing, though. But my first Marvel Comics actual thing that I did was the 50th, I guess, issue of Miss Marvel, where they did, like, the multi-story thing. Like, I have a history with Kamala. or what? I don't know. It was the first thing I did at Marvel. She's great. And, I wasn't reading a ton of comics for a while. Then, like, they were getting all this press about, oh, they're doing this thing, and she's Pakistani, and she's Muslim, and she's Miss Marvel now. And I was like, well, I'll read it. Let's see what happens. And, like, I super enjoyed it.
That's awesome.
As, like, an old-ass dude, I was like, oh, this is a fun book for the youth. It's a lot of fun. She's writing fan fiction. She's got big hands. This is great. So I really enjoyed it. So then, like, that was the first book I got to draw from Marvel. I was like, hell yeah. And then they were like, hey, do you want to go and do a Miss Marvel thing again, only it's Champions this time? And I was like, well, yeah, obviously. So
that's awesome. Yeah. Now this sounds like an instant success story, Bob, but you've been doing comics for like 1,000 years, correct? I know I've been following you on Twitter for at least like 4 or 5 because you started, like, you've been doing this forever. Tell us about your first book. We know about what you're doing now. Well, not even what you're doing now, because what you're doing now is different, but we know about the success. So tell us about coming up through the industry and how that worked out.
Oh man. So I'll go back to the very beginning.
Oh,
I usually don't talk about this, but, and I don't know why. The first thing I ever did, I ran a web comic for a million years. And it was basically the story of two little animals that basically farted and pooped and vomited on each other.
Okay, I'm in.
It was called Baron Tiger. It's absolutely terrible. But it was like a Russian military base, and there was a tiger and a bear, and they were just mean to each other, and that was pretty much it. And then like all kinds of crazy crap happened. And then I kind of stepped away for like a billion years because like I came from the video game industry originally, straight out of college. I got a job at Disney. And
oh,
then,
wow.
Yeah, but I was like producing video games. So like basically what the job was I was at the publishing end. So like I'd call up a developer and I'd go, the game that you're making for us sucks. Make it better or you're not getting paid. And I go, we're very sorry. We'll do it. And then I eventually made my way through to, I was working at a development house. And I did, I worked for Heavy Iron, which is the company that did like the SpongeBob games. And all this time I was either producing or designing. I was never doing artwork for anything. And then I eventually ended up at Activision, where we had a really weird situation where a product I was on got put on hold and I had nothing to do. So I would go and I would draw every day. And somehow in the process of me drawing, Ben Acker of the Thrilling Adventure Hour saw something of mine and liked it.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, well, that's funny. What a strange coincidence. So I drew a picture of one of the characters. Do you guys listen to the Thrilling Adventure Hour at all?
No, but I listen to their sister podcast. I used to listen to the Nerdist Writers podcast.
Oh, okay. Well, they had a character called Carlisle Ravencastle, who I thought was like a Nosferatu, like overly dramatic Nosferatu vampire, who I thought was absolutely hilarious. So like I drew a picture of him and then I just tagged Ben and I was like, I don't know, nothing will come of this. And then he immediately ends up in my DMs and he's like, dude, we're doing a book right now. Do you want to draw it? And wow. I had just come off up. So that's like the first published thing I did. Before that, I'd actually done a graphic novel on my own. And I like basically was like, I talked to my wife. I was like, I hate my job. I hate everything I'm doing. Can I just draw a comic book? Is that cool? And she was like, yeah.
Oh, that's very
nice. I had like the most understanding wife in the universe. But so basically I took a year off and I drew this book, and you know, I'm still very proud of it to this day. You can buy it at any con that you find your old pal Bob at. So I drew that, and then Ben saw my stuff and then he was like, we're doing this thing. Do you want to do it? And I was like, yeah. When can you start? I don't know, in like a month. That's too late. We're already behind. I was like, well, there goes that, right? So they were like, well,
that's
how about you
comics of you though? You're already behind. Like, oh,
yeah,
cool.
Right. They were already super late. So they were like, well, would you like to do some flashback pages for us? And I was like, sure, I'll do that. It was just like one page per issue. And I delivered them. And then they were like, the artist that we got in your stead needs more time. Will you do a full fill-in issue? I was like, sure. So I delivered the issue and it didn't suck.
Well, that's
and
good.
Then miraculously, and then I did. Then they were like, the other artist has to back out. Do you want to finish the series? Yes. So I finished the series and then I delivered the last book in the series in 2 weeks.
Wow. Jesus Christ. How much cocaine were you doing at that point? Like,
that's a lot of salted straw.
Listen, this is Body by Ice Cream. Okay. There's no cocaine to be found around here. So that I guess ingratiated me to the editor, who then goes, hey, do you want to keep drawing stuff for me? I was like, all right, sure. So then from that, I ended up doing the Green Hornet 66 Meets the Spirit.
Okay.
And then I did James Bond Origins. This is all through Dynamite. And then I did Lone Ranger with Mark Russell. And then I did Red Sonja. And then as that happened, I started picking up more Marvel work along the way. But that's basically my trajectory into comics.
I mean, that's awesome. I mean, listen to what you started, though, with, like, Green Hornet and the Spirit. And and that's, I mean, the pressure from that alone has to be just daunting, because you're doing, you know, Will Eisner stuff, for God's sakes.
Oh, yeah. And I was working with Fred Van Lente, who is like...
Who's brilliant.
He's incredible. Like, that book is so funny. Like, I was still pretty rough around the edges, and I don't think I did the best job, but like that guy knows how to draw stuff that's just, or knows how to write stuff that's going to be fun to draw, and his scripts are super easy to work off of. Like he describes just enough so that you have plenty of room to play, but tells you exactly what you need to know so that you can get the essence of it down on the page, and then just gives you a ton of room to, you know, free reign, do what you got to do, have a good time. And that's why his books are always consistently really good. Like, he just knows what to feed the artist.
Yeah, because I think the first time you popped up on my radar was around Lone Ranger stuff. because I've always been a fan, and I was like, this is interesting, and it looked great. Like, you did a wonderful job on that. You and Mark Russell killed that, so that's awesome.
Yeah, thank you. That's one they actually let me they let me color that one as well, so
Fancy.
That was fun.
That's
cool. No, Mark is great. That book is still one of my favorites of all time. Like, it was like, Mark is an incredible writer at, hey, here's some social commentary. Here's something that you're not thinking about in the realm of today, right? Like, the look at his work on Flintstones, look at the stuff on Snagglepuss. This was such a good this was my favorite version of Mark Russell, because it was a fun cowboy romp on top of the fact that, like, I felt like that if you were looking for the commentary on today, you would absolutely find it, right?
Yes.
But you didn't need it in order to enjoy it. Like, I think some of, you know, like the Flintstones issue that was about just buying crap, right? Like, that felt very today, but like the Lone Ranger story was such a Lone Ranger story, but it was still so relevant to what's going on right now. I don't know. I really, really love it.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
And so then you did some Red Sonja stuff, and the Red Sonja stuff came out what, last year, 2 years ago?
Yeah, it was like last year.
Because it seems like the relaunch, because a buddy of ours was doing Red Sonja, Vampirella, Drew Moss was doing that.
Oh yeah.
I think all that kind of launched around the same time, because it was like an anniversary for Red Sonja, correct?
That one I can't speak to. I'm super, like, my comic book history is awful, because okay, I was not a huge comic book reader growing up. Like, I read mostly, I started out as a webcomic artist. I read mostly strip comics.
Okay.
And the majority of what I read was actually Mad Magazine. So, like, if you want to talk to me about, like, Don Martin and Mort Drucker and Duck Edwing and, like, all those guys, Dave Berg, let's talk. But, like, when it comes to, like, old Marvel stuff, like, I always feel like a sham, because they're like, well, if you remember the storyline from 1987 with Nightcrawler, and I'm like, nope, I don't remember it. I didn't read it. Sorry, guys.
That's awesome. I love
that. I was busy watching a Mountie get chopped in half in a comic book. Stupid.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, Bob loves Mad Magazine.
Yeah, I'm a big, because they even relaunched it recently. But it went away, but they relaunched it a couple years ago, and I was picking them up just out of habit. Like, I read Mad Magazine as a kid, yep, and then I got to a point where I stopped reading it. And then I picked it up again in college, oddly enough, because I was like, I'm going to read this in college. So I started reading it, and I dropped it off again. But then the new stuff was really good.
I've had a subscription to that since I was probably 10 or 15, because my dad had it, and then he would get it for me. Like, he just gifted it to me, and he was like, that's here. Awesome. So, like, I just read them all the time. We had him in the house. We always had him in the house. And then they moved everything out to Burbank, and then it was still good. It was still funny. And then I guess readership was no good or something,
yeah,
like that.
Because
it just now they're just doing reruns until everybody's subscriptions run out. Sucks.
Which is kind of a bummer, because, I mean, Mad Magazine's one of those things. Like, I would just leave it around the house, and I would catch my daughter reading it, who's 10, and she wouldn't get all the jokes, but she dug it. Like, she liked when they made fun of Trump, and, you know, she was into it, and I thought it was cute to see a 10-year-old read Mad Magazine. I was into it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And how great are the fold-ups in the back? You can't beat the fold-ups in the back.
Oh, man. My first San Diego Comic-Con, I met Al Jaffe, and I lost my mind.
Oh, wow. Like, that's awesome.
Those were the – because it was a total accident, because I went to go see Sergio Aragonés, because my dad, you know, obviously was a big fan. Mad look at whatever, you name it. Like, it. So, like, I got a picture with him. I got some stuff signed. And Al Jaffe just happened to be there. And I was like, oh, my God. And, and like, nobody knew who he was. So I was like, I'm really sorry. Can you sign this thing? He's like, yeah. But, he's a million years old. So.
Yeah, because he was, like, 99, wasn't he? Like, is he still around? Isn't he, like, not around? Is he alive still, Al Jaffe?
I think he's still kicking.
I want to say he's.
Mort Drucker just died.
Yeah, I know that.
That one I know.
Let me see. I'll Google Al Jaffe.
And Mort Drucker is the guy who did the Anthrax album, I believe. He did the State of Euphoria album that we were.
Al Jaffe is still alive.
Incredible.
99 years old. And the thing is,
a storied tradition.
When you see Al Jaffe's work, you instantly know, like, oh, that's Al Jaffe.
Oh yeah.
Like,
so when I was a kid, my dad and I actually made a Mad Magazine together.
Really?
And there was a fold in at the end. Yeah, I have to I have it somewhere in my closet over here.
That's wonderful.
And it had a fold in with a man vomiting at the end of it. Just, I have a brand. at this point.
Yes, it's all yes. poop jokes.
Yes. I mean, but you know what, though? If it works, it works, man. Stay in your lane. Stay in your lane.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Look,
if you want to see somebody puke all kinds of colors, just give me a call. I'll draw it. I'm not that expensive.
If the price is right, I'll draw your
money. I mean, if it's got vomit, he like there's a discount. Like there's a discount
for I discount heavily for vomit pages.
Okay. But just vomit pages. Other pages you gotta pay the full rate.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Because that would be silly, you know. Like why undercut yourself if you don't need to? So it just got recently announced though that you are doing one of the X books, correct?
Yeah, can you believe it? I can't.
That's awesome. Well, you're doing New Mutants, aren't you?
No, I'm doing Way of X.
That's right. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. A thousand apologies.
Yeah, exactly. How are you supposed to keep them all straight at this point? No apology required, sir.
The Way of X, is that that's what it's called? Now, who do you get to draw? Who's in this team?
Let me tell you who's in this book. We've got Nightcrawler.
I'm in. All right.
I like that's Nightcrawler, all I need. Too.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right. You can't go wrong, right? Got Nightcrawler, okay. Pixie, Loa. We got DJs in there. Let's see, and then a whole ton of other. We introduced some new characters. I'm telling you right now, like I don't like to be.
Look, House of X and Powers of Ten really shook up the comic book industry, but like, but it kind of did, right? Like it totally changed the way that X-Men and mutants works, right?
Yes. Right.
There's some stuff that happens at the end of the first issue that is kind of like, oh shit. Really?
Yeah.
And there's some stuff in issue two that, like, by the end of that, you're going, oh, shit, really? Like, we're there. So Cy Spurrier's writing it. And
he's great.
He's phenomenal. And he's not afraid to, you know, kind of shake the banana tree. Is that a term? I don't know.
It is now.
Is that a thing people say?
Sure.
No, he'll fold the vanilla twice.
Yes. He's not afraid to fold the vanilla as many as three times. And then I will eat it.
So, like, dude, you've worked with some heavy hitters, too, man.
Look at you, Cy Spurrier, Fred Van Pompey.
I mean, you're talking about, like heavyweight champions of comics here, my man.
You're talking to two losers on a winning night about ice cream.
Yeah. What were you guys going to do?
I don't know.
I mean, we've got nothing better.
He's got one foot in the gold, one fist in the gutter, however. Backwards.
Yeah, man.
Backwards, the old Ricky Rackley.
I like to remember where it came from.
Exactly. I remember being a loser nobody. Now I got two, count them, two crockpots, baby.
Yeah. Hey, guys, look, all I'm saying is just live your dream. Never give up. Two crockpots. Draw from Marvel Comics. That's all it takes. Just keep at it. You can do it.
We're just going to keep writing dumb books about shark guys.
That's wonderful.
Shit, cool. Yes. That is exactly what the people want. I read that book. It is very good.
Yeah, we had a good time.
Had fun. Thank you.
Yeah, dude. But I mean, the heavy hitters, man. Like, do you consider yourself like? It sounds like you're almost blessed, man, with your comic career. Like all these fucking great artists and people and titles and stuff.
People from the Nerdist.
It's wonderful. Crazy. Yeah.
I've been incredibly lucky. I have absolutely zero idea how any of it has happened. I really don't.
It's because you're talented too. Talent has to play a role.
I'm all right. Like it's been really wild. Like I have any time I got onto a new book, I'd go, oh, that guy's writing? Heck yeah. Cause it was like I went from Fred Van, well, myself, first of all, I went from me, which was a pretty high bar. But then I went from me to Fred to Jeff Parker.
Oh, how is it working with Jeff Parker? I love Jeff Parker.
Jeff is amazing. He's
one of my
amazing
favorite writers.
He's a wonderful human being. He also knows like good comics, and that he wrote the James Bond series that I was.
That's
he's
right.
Phenomenal.
I totally forgot that.
And Bobby loves Agents of Atlas.
Atlas is one of my favorite Marvel things ever. He wrote that, but I mean everything he writes is great. Like the Batman 66 stuff was perfect.
Yeah,
like
he absolutely.
Did a book for Oni that I love, but I can't remember the name of it. And that sounds stupid, but like because the name is weird. But the book is awesome. I can't remember the name because the name is weird. And they did it for Oni Press. So I can't, I'd have to go look on my shelf.
Yeah,
so.
I know what you're thinking is, and I'm like, oh, I know the name of it too. It's weird.
Weird name. That's the problem. Yeah, it's a great book. It's got a weird name though. And Jeff Parker wrote it. Something about
Meteor Man. Or something. Meteor Man.
That's it.
Yeah.
Something about a meteor.
I read Meteor Man too. It was good.
Yes. Yeah. So it's like I got to work with Jeff Parker, and then I went from that immediately over to Mark Russell, like Critical Darling and Amazing Human Being, right? Like, I'm working over at Marvel. First person I worked with was Rainbow Roll, and then, oh, wow. Yeah, and then they wanted me to, I don't want to get into that, but so, like, you know, it's been an incredible trajectory. Did Captain America with Ta-Nehisi Coates, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, wow. if there's a radical writer, somehow I got to work with them, and that's I don't know awesome. Why. Like, Eve Ewing is amazing. Like, if you haven't been reading this Champions run, it's incredibly relevant. It's incredibly empowering for young people. Super well written. And it's just, it's really fun. Like, she killed it. She did an amazing job on that book. And then, like, you know, right now I'm working with Cy Spurrier. I don't know how any of this happened.
This is wonderful. It's all because you did a bullshit piece of fan art for some podcast or whatever.
Yes. So that's what got me in at Dynamite. Can I tell you a story about how I got my first job at Marvel?
Sure.
Of course.
It's fan art again. Don't let anybody tell you not to draw fan art, because I drew right when All New Wolverine came out. You know, everybody was loved that honey badger, that Gabby Kinney. So I drew a picture of her, mm-hmm. and then Tom Taylor saw it. I didn't even tag him in it, but he was just like, "This is great," and he retweeted it. And I was like, I had jokingly said, "Whenever you guys want to do a Gabby series, I'll draw it." And he was like, so he saw it, retweeted it, and tagged his editors. And then, like, the next morning, I had, like, a DM in my inbox from Marvel, and they were like, "Hey, do our editors actually know you?" And I was like, "No." And he's like, "Email these guys, good luck." And I was like, "Okay."
Wow. So, like, did you have to do 100 samples? Because we've heard, like, nope. Horror stories of nothing? Just, no. You just walked in day one, like, "Here I am."
He did the fan art.
"Here I am, give me fucking Nightcrawler. Let's get this going." Like, that's
here I go again on my own. Like, that's how it is, man. I just had a bunch of pages around, right? So, like, I had all my stuff from Dynamite, and I just sent it over, and I'm like, "I draw these." And then I was like, "If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, I'll just keep doing what I'm doing," right? And
I'm
then
a little skeptical. You took a picture of yourself drawing doing the splits in between two BMWs, didn't you?
Well, yeah, I did do that. Okay. It didn't hurt, but I paper clipped it to the samples and mailed them
in.
I I looked very impressive, and you know, I was like, "If I don't get this job,
David Coverdale, here I am."
Exactly.
This is wonderful.
I can do this karate. It's dangerous. So yeah, but I mean, I've like I said, I have no idea how I've been this lucky, but I've been incredibly lucky in this stupid industry that is so dumb.
Well, because it does seem like, you know, of course you're talented, and of course you're able to hit deadlines, and of course you're able to do the work that's necessary to get to Marvel, but it does kind of seem like sometimes it's just like it's a crapshoot, right?
Yeah, did the right person on the right day see you? That's literally what it is. Because I mean, like, you know, I remember when I hate being this guy, because like it's a really, really hard job. But I remember picking up some books and looking at Marvel and be like, "I'm better than this guy. What the hell is this?" So, like, whatever. Right? But like I don't like doing that, because like, look, man, you got to do so much work so quickly, and sometimes some stinkers get through. Like, you know, there's really no way around it. So like, it's that old, you need 2 out of 3. You either need to be amazing, you need to be good to work with, or you need to be on time.
Yes.
And I know that I'm very easy to work with, and I know that I always hit my deadlines. So.
That's awesome. That's wonderful. But it's so crazy that this entire industry is built on just like happenstance. Like, "Oh, I saw your stuff that day, and cool, you want to draw Spider-Man?" It's like, yes, I do. You know?
Yeah, that sounds like a fun job. Sure.
That's awesome.
And 2 out of 3 ain't bad, so we'll take you.
And you're so smooth and easy doing this podcasting thing. It's like you have your own podcast.
I do have my own podcast.
Booze
and Brews podcast, where my wife and her best friend tell each other ghost stories, drink thematically appropriate beer, and I say things that are very stupid in the background.
Interesting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Sounds like a job you were born for. That's
oh, man. If I'm not drawing comic books, I'm saying dumb shit. That's yeah.
If we're not writing comic books, we're saying dumb shit.
Yeah. So. Most of the time, we're saying dumb shit while in comic books.
We put the dumb shit that we say in the comic books.
It actually ends up in the book, and it's cataloged for all to enjoy for the rest of eternity. I love it.
Yes.
So, Booze and Brews, you've been doing this. You said before we started recording, you have 200 episodes of this thing.
200. I think we're close to 250 at this point.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah. So basically what happens is
my wife and her friend Vanessa will each pick a real world ghost, right? So like Lepp Castle is apparently haunted by a thing called the Elemental, right? And they will tell each other sort of the history of the area, what the ghost is, what happens. Like you'll see a man who's about the size of a sheep and he's shadowy and he kind of smells like a fart and then he's very spooky. Literally, like apparently he smells like sulfur or something like that. Okay. And then he like haunts you on your way home. And then my wife will be like, oh, okay. And then this particular asylum is haunted by all these crazy people. And then at the end of it, I say, this was the better ghost story. You win. And then they have chosen a beer that fits thematically with the story that they have chosen.
Interesting. That's cool.
Yeah.
That sounds
We hear it's kind of funny.
Now, does that happen like once a week? Is this a once a week kind of thing or?
Once a week. And then since the pandemic has hit, we have been trying to be kind to our listeners and we've been giving them additional content where on Thursdays, we will typically do an episode watch along recap thing of like a Ghost Adventures with if you're familiar with that show.
That's fun. Okay.
Yeah, so we just sit around and make fun of those goofballs running around going, bro, there's a ghost. Oh, dude. And then, you know, we have a laugh about it. And then I think for Christmas this year, we usually do a Christmas episode. And then at the end of the year last year, we did like a D&D real play podcast because apparently that's very popular. Yes, nobody gave a shit in our audience, but we had fun with it. So.
Well, sometimes you have to do things for you, you know? Yeah.
Exactly.
Nice.
Look, I'm going to make what I'm going to make and you just have to enjoy it.
Exactly.
All right? Or don't. I don't care.
Exactly. That's
weird. Yeah.
Now, I noticed that you're wearing an LA Kings hat. Are you a hockey fan?
I am a big hockey fan, yeah.
That's awesome. And so I take it you are a Kings fan, yes?
Yes, because in Wisconsin, where I am from, we only have an AHL team. So as soon as I moved out to LA, I was like, I guess these are my guys now. Because when I first moved out here, the Kings were terrible. I was here during the Ziggy Palfy years.
But say what you want, because I'm an old Islander fan from when Ziggy played for the Islanders.
Oh, sure.
He was a damn good player.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But there was nobody else on that team.
Yeah.
So, like, it was amazing because you could get tickets for cheaper than one beer. So it was a really good way to, you know, waste the money you didn't have in college. So we would go down and we'd watch some hockey because it was like I went to USC, so you could literally just walk down the street and go to a hockey game.
Oh, so you're a Trojan too? Fancy.
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a storied institution with – you know, many great athletes that have attended there. Didn't Will Ferrell go to USC? I believe?
He sure did. I played basketball with Matt Leinart of the USC Trojans.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. How'd that work out for you?
I'm not great at basketball. Uh-huh. B, he's much taller than me.
Yes, he is. That's interesting. Matt Leinart. Okay.
Yeah.
So you're a USC grad. You moved out to LA. You're a Kings fan. The Kings had a little stretch where they were pretty good for a while.
Sure.
They won
Not
the
anymore.
Cup, right? They won the cup, didn't they?
Absolutely. They absolutely did. And now all the people that got them there are ancient with big contracts and they can't get rid of them. So we're in the dark years before the young people that we're cultivating right now become
the young people
the
that
guys.
You're cultivating.
Yeah.
You sound like a vampire.
The youngins were grooming.
Yes. That's awesome. Yeah, that's a bad word. Don't say
that got,
yeah.
That got dark.
Yes,
I'm sorry I brought that energy to your podcast.
You know, I'll edit that out. I don't want you to lose your job at Marvel. I don't want anybody to have to listen to this. He's grooming people?
This guy is a creep.
In the champions, he's grooming people.
It sounds like you lived this charmed life, my friend.
It certainly feels that way a lot of the time. I mean, like, I went from working an office job where I hated every day and everybody was yelling at me and nothing was ever good enough to I get to sit in my house, nobody bothers me, and I draw fun comic books. Like, okay.
That's awesome.
Yeah, you could do a lot worse.
Yeah, that's really cool, man.
Yeah.
And I mean, and again, you might be one of the best guests we've ever had on the podcast. So congratulations.
Oh, man.
Yes.
And you're episode 100. So.
What?
Yeah,
this is incredible.
This is episode 100. You are our 100th, not our 100th guest, but you're our 100th show. So congratulations to you. Maybe we'll send you like a commemorative plaque.
Oh, that would be great. Or like a koozie or a mug or something like that from
maybe like
Cafe Press.
So I'll figure something out. We'll send you. I'll email you a gift.
Or don't send me anything. It's okay. The journey was the gift.
The not sending anything sounds the most probable of all this, but you never know. You never know.
It's a crapshoot over here with us.
Yeah.
I love it.
You made like complimentary Metal Shark Pro issues or something.
So real quick before we get going, when does the Cy Spurrier book start hitting the shelves, my man?
I think it's in April. I have no idea.
Okay.
I'm super duper bad at this. Usually what happens is there's a bunch of like bleeding cool articles about the book that I'm on, and then people start tweeting their reviews and they go, oh, I guess my book's out today.
Do you want me to look it up? Way of X is your book? Yes.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's April.
We're going to try and be professional today.
I just finished the first issue. So.
Nightcrawler leads the way of X-Men's future. I like the fact that Nightcrawler is getting his own team. I really like Nightcrawler. He kind of had his own team back with
Excalibur.
With Excalibur.
Yeah. And Bob and I, and we love Excalibur.
So. I do.
Excalibur is my favorite X-Men book ever.
I don't see a date here.
Really? Okay, well, I need to pick that one up then.
Yeah. Here it says, you ever read it? It's great.
I have not.
I'm not a huge X-Men fan.
You know people over there. They'll send you some stuff, right? Like, that's got to be Burke's bro, right?
No, absolutely not. Look, you don't understand how difficult it is for me to even get comps of the things I draw.
Get the hell out of here. So it never changes? The industry never changes whether you're in the slum house or the penthouse? It's always the same?
Always the same. That's what they said, is you will never own every book you've drawn. And I only just recently got the email saying, some of my books are coming. I don't know which ones. I was so sad because like I really, really, really wanted this run on Champions like somewhere in the house. And like I have none of them because it was again.
Buy it at the comic book store like everybody else. Mr. Fancy Pants too.
Listen, I ask very little. I have earned this.
It says here that your book comes out in April. It says it
hey, I was right.
In April.
Yes.
Written by Cy Spurrier and Bob Quinn.
So yeah.
And if we want to find you on social media and stuff, where can we find you, Bob?
Oh, man. Because I'm the worst at branding, they're different on every website.
Me
if
too.
You are interested in my idiotic thoughts and occasional drawings, please follow me on Twitter, RobotJQ, R-O-B-O-T-J-Q. If you like just the drawings, but I don't post there anymore because it's a trash hole, Instagram is King of Smaster.
King of Smaster? What's that all about?
It's such a long story, but I'll tell it to you anyway.
I'd love to hear it.
We want to hear it.
When I was in high school, I visited Mexico. And when I was there, there was a band that was very popular all over the Mexican MTV called Plastilina Mosh.
Okay.
And I don't know what any of that means, right? But I spoke Spanish and that stuff was enjoyable. And they had a song called Mr. P-Mosh that was all over the TV. Everybody loved it. So I picked it up and there was a song on the album that was called Monster Truck. And they did sort of Spanglish in all of their rapping and musical stylings.
Okay.
So they didn't speak English the best. But the Monster Truck song had the best line ever. It was, yeah, I'm the Master Blaster and I make disaster. I'm the Chaos Master. But because of the accent, it sounded like I'm the King of Smaster. And I always thought that was really funny. And so I didn't think Instagram was going to be a thing. So I was like, I don't know, I'm King of Smaster. And then it blew up and became the biggest thing ever. And then I look like an idiot. Oh, well.
All right. That's not, you know what? That could have been worse. That story could have been worse. It wasn't bad. It was just youthful exuberance.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited about monster trucks. That's what it is.
And you can tell that it's you because at least you keep one thing consistent on all of your social media handles. The description is always poop train conductor.
Yes.
If you want to make sure it's quality Bob Q content, look for poop train conductor.
Choo-choo.
Bob, this was wonderful, man. Thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate you enjoying your dinner with us.
And
treat yourself to some ice cream. You deserve it after such a smashing
year. Yes, fold that vanilla three times. Yes.
Oh, man, I'm going to. Thank you so much. This has been a delight.
All right, so we've been talking while not recording, and there's just so much kind of good stuff. And Bob just told us a very good kind of anecdote about his self-published stuff, because you do Marvel work, but you also have a desire to own things that you do, yes?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, right? Because
Kids, listen. If you're thinking about getting into the comic book industry, there's a little thing you got to know. There's no retirement plan. You got to be at this desk until you're dead. So the best chance you have of that is collecting royalties on a thing that you own, right? I don't own Nightcrawler. I don't get that. I think it was Cockrum gets that, right? Not me, right? Like, and you know, I have created a character for Marvel, and they do have a deal where, like, if that character ever ends up in a movie, I get it. Nobody's making a fucking Skunk Girl movie, okay? It's just not happening. Right? But you know, if it happens, it happens. I'm not going to, right? So I have been trying for ever since, like, since my first job here, I've been trying to figure out ways to get in and understand the mind of an editor so that when I go, here's the book I want to make, they say, that's great. We want to make that book. And I've had absolutely no luck with it at all.
It's so odd because pitching, I feel like pitching is a giant fucking just crapshoot. Like it's this unknown entity because it's a completely different style of writing than you would do for, it's basically like a sales document.
Oh yeah. And on top of that, like, I don't know that I would actually be able to successfully do a book at a publisher that was creator-owned, because the fact of the matter is like, when I write for myself, it is so, like, there's nothing there, right? Like, it'll be like a page that has some dialogue in it, and I'll be like, all right, that's probably what's going to happen. But then as I start drawing it, all that shit's out the window, because, like, nope, none of that flows. Nope, none of that's right. So I'm also terrified of the fact that, like, maybe one day somebody will take me up on it, and then I'll go, yeah, no, none of that stuff that I wrote is actually in the book.
So you have active pitches out right now that are just like, and do you get emails back from editors and things of that nature? Or are you just kind of dangling in the wind, like happens to 99% of the comic industry? Because most of this business is just people not answering emails.
That is correct. So don't worry, kids, when you get your first job at Marvel, or when you become super fancy X-Men artist, they still don't email you back. I've had editors come up to me at cons and say, I want to work with you. Here's my card. And I go, awesome. And then I say, here's 50 ideas that I have that I want to make a book on. And then I'll just give them log lines. You tell me which one you are even remotely interested in, or you think your publishing company would be interested in. I'll do the pitch document for you. And then I'll send them off, and they'll be like, these four are good. And then oftentimes I already have pages for them, because what happens with me is I'll get six pages into a thing and go, oh, this is fun. And then, you know, the paying work comes in and I got to go and do that. Yeah, so like, course. I have random pages of all kinds of crap lying around. So like, I'll send them off, and then the silence. And then I email them back, and then I don't hear from them. And I email them again, like usually like once a month, because like I'm super busy and they're super busy and I don't want to bug them. I hear that's not the way you're supposed to do it, but I don't know. So I email them, and then eventually they go like, oh yes, hey, I remember you. Yes, I do want to work with you. And remember that guidance that I gave you on all the pitches? That, publishing has completely changed the kind of the style of books they want to do. So all of those are out the window. Send me new ones. I'm like, all right, well, here's some new ones that I've come up with since then. And then the silence comes again. So, you know, yeah, I guess everybody's got their own, right? Like, everybody's got their own path through, right? Yeah, like, no, I've somehow managed to get in to like the big two track, but then anytime I want to do something that's my own, I can't get a phone call. So, you know,
it's just
pluses and minuses.
Well, I mean, Kevin and I have two pitches out now that are just kind of floating around in the ether. And like, it's just kind of like, well, if you don't hear anything back in a month, then you're done. And it's just like, how can a whole industry work this way? Like, how is that the norm?
I have no idea, man. Like, I don't understand the decision-making process on most of it, because ultimately, right, so when you're dealing with a publisher on an indie book, or like a creator-owned book, 9 times out of 10, unless you're going with Image, where you just have to catch Eric Stevenson on the right day, right, these people are looking at, what is an IP that we can own half of? Because that's what you're giving away, right?
Yeah, of course.
And some companies are even worse than that, right? But like, what do we think is worth owning half of? What can we turn into a cartoon show, t-shirts, pop vinyls, a movie, right? All that stuff. And if it doesn't have, like, and some places are weird. Some places will go, yeah, we'll put out your weird book that doesn't make any sense. But but in general, that's what they're looking for, right? Like, we're looking for the next Road to Perdition. We're looking for the next Stumptown, right? We're looking for the next thing, name thing that it, the next Scott Pilgrim, right? Like,
yeah,
that's what they want, right? And I am
keenly aware that that's not what I want to make. So, now, yeah.
Now, what kind of books do you want to make? Like, that's my next question here.
That was going to be mine. So.
I want to do a book. I have one that's like 13 pages in. That's the story of a cowboy witch that has to save a whole town from a Cthulhoid engine of destruction. It's very strange. Okay. But like, you know, I don't think that's going to be your next TV show. I have one that's just called High School Demon Assassin. And it was pretty straightforward.
What's that about?
It's the story of a child born to privilege in 1846. It's exactly what it sounds like. I've got a pilot of all this weird shit, and I'm just like, I think until I actually decide, yeah, I'm going to throw up a Kickstarter, like none of these things are going to happen.
That was right? My next question.
Yes,
so when,
why don't you? Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I don't, frankly, I don't have time, and I keep like, luckily I've kept very busy, right? Like even through the pandemic, I never actually had a work stoppage, right?
Wow.
Like okay. The whole time I was either drawing. As a matter of fact, when the pandemic started, I was doing two books a month.
Jeez Louise.
Yeah. I had accidentally signed up to do Red Sonja at the same time that I got an opportunity to draw Captain America. And I was like, I can't say no to Captain America. Because that would be stupid.
Yes.
And then I tried to back out of Red Sonja, and my editor, this is the guy who trusted me from the beginning and gave me my first job, knows exactly what buttons to push to make me feel so guilty I can't leave. So all I did was not sleep. Okay. But I got the books done, and they're not terrible. But you know, it's like I've stayed pretty busy, and you know, when I have downtime, it's usually like a week, and I will crank out as much stuff as I can in that week. But typically what happens after that is somebody will go, hey, we've got this thing. Do you want to draw it? And I go, yeah, I need money. I need to keep the lights on and eat food to survive. So I end up having
ice cream. Yeah.
Look, I have one vice, and it's fancy ice cream. And it's also apparently guitar equipment, which you all see behind
me.
I see that.
I wasn't going to say anything, but it looks good.
Yeah, there's piles of it back here. That you should. There's a whole nother wall of it back here. See, like all this.
Good stuff. Lord.
Yeah, I had a problem at one point.
That's cool.
A music problem.
Yeah, I have a musical problem. So, but yeah, I mean, you know, I grew up too Midwestern, and my dad instilled too much of a fear of going broke in me because, like, he always said, study math and science, and I didn't. And he's like, and then I had a good job at a big company, and then I left it to do freelance. And I can tell every time I talk to him, he worries about me. But what that has done is that I have such a fear of like running out of money or something bad happening to me that I never take time off to just focus on something I want to focus on. It's as soon as the next opportunity comes to me, I take it. And I start running with it. Mm-hmm. And what that ultimately ends up doing, of course, is really limiting the amount of stuff that I want to make that I can actually end up making. So,
but isn't that kind of, I don't want to say par for the course for big two stuff, but like once you're in, don't you have to stay in? Like that's, people think like getting to Marvel's the cool part, but no, you have to stay in there. You have to constantly stay working. So is part of that just conditioning? Like, okay, if they ask me to draw a Fantastic Four backup, I'm going to fucking do it because I want to stay in their radar.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a big part of it. Because I mean, like the worst thing to have happen is all of a sudden, like I do take that time off. And then I turned down, because like I've turned down Marvel in the past because I was doing something else. And like there was nothing harder for me to do because I'm like, they may never call me back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, because that's the risk you run of like, well, this is the third time we've emailed this guy. And every time he says no, like, why are we bothering? Right.
Right.
Because, you know, there's a million other people who look just like me, some just like me, Eminem lyrics. There's a million people who want to do this job. And I know that there are people that I came up with that are better than me. Like I can guarantee you that. So if I don't stay on their radar, and when they say, ask me if I want to do something and say, yes, that stream of revenue may dry up completely. Right.
Yeah.
And you know, you're only as relevant as your last job. Right. And you gotta stay relevant. You gotta keep out there and keep putting out work. Otherwise people forget your name. Like that's, you know, that's been the hardest thing about working on this Marvel stuff too, is like, I can't share anything. You know, your career is so much about like, I posted today on Instagram. I posted on Twitter. Here's a picture I drew, right? I got 1,000 likes, and that's how people know that you're actually somebody who's working, right? Yeah. Nobody knows what I'm doing right now.
Oh, just post God. Your warm-ups. Warm-up pictures.
Yeah, those warm-up pictures that took somebody 3 hours under ink wash, or just a quick cool down. Whatever.
I wish you guys could see the tongue that he stuck out right there. That was
oh yeah, there's a whole performance arts aspect of this. We're gonna stream on YouTube.
It is art, though. You have to remember, it's art. No matter what you're doing, it's still art. You know, like
my favorite ones for warm up are things like where you see Duncan Fergato. It's like, oh, just and everything he does is like magical, and then you look at it and go, Jesus, he spent like 3 hours doing that. There's no way he was like 15 minutes and done.
Every time just makes
and
me
it's
nuts.
Beautiful. And yeah, I'm like, oh, that thing is
that's
gorgeous.
What he looks like warming up.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like, God. This is that's your warm up. That's not what my pages look like. Like, I don't even understand this shit. Like, oh God, I was so my friends got me into this show, Manben, the show that Urasawa does with all the mangaka in Japan. Have you heard about this?
No, I haven't. Mm-hmm.
So it's a really amazing show. What he does is like he'll set up 8 cameras in a mangaka's studio, right? And they'll just film them over the course of a week. And then at the end, they'll just watch the footage together and be like, this is what you do. How are you doing that? It's amazing. This is your process. And like, they'll just talk about the stuff that they're making. It's just it's on Daily Motion, but it, like, it's an amazing watch, right? And
say what you said on Daily Motion on here. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, right. So it's all on Daily Motion, and it's a fun watch. And it's really interesting. But I was watching one today where a guy was redrawing the same pose over and over and over again, and I had a flashback to 3 hours earlier when I kept fighting the same part of this picture, and I redrew it 12 times, and what's on the page is good enough. Which is the biggest heartbreaker, right? Because you want every page to be like, somebody goes, oh, I want that on my wall. And it's just like, sometimes it's just not, it's not in the cards, man. Oh, it's just the worst. That's awesome. You know, I'm going to look at that page later. I'm going to be like, I'm going to have to redraw that. Anyway.
What character is it?
Oh, it was it's the weirdest panel to have struggled with. So something, hey guys, get excited because something bad happens.
No.
In the X universe, trouble's a brewing, and Nightcrawler has to gather up his team at the Green Lagoon, that fun place where they all go to booze up. So it's a shot from behind Nightcrawler. He's just grabbed Pixie. So like, he's running this way and he's got her. And then this character that we've created kind of floats in, right? But I could not get Nightcrawler and Pixie running away from the camera towards the person and kind of looking like they were stopping, being like, whoa, right? And I drew it like 4 different ways. And then I tried, so like for my pencils, I tend to work digitally just because it's easier to mush and move things around. So like, I was like, well, what if I draw it real small? So like, I drew it really, really tiny and then tried blowing it up. And then that didn't work. And I drew it sort of medium size. And then I changed the color of the lines to see if that would do something different. So like, now I'm drawing it red. And then the red kind of worked. So then like, I made that bigger. And then eventually I got to a place where it's all right. It seems to communicate what I was trying.
My
to
dad used to say, hey, good enough for government work.
Right? Oh, yeah. That's horseshoes awesome. And hand grenades or whatever. Exactly. Close enough.
Well, we're going to let you go again, Bob. Thank you so much for coming back on.
This is my pleasure.
Yeah, this is
you know great. What? You know what? Stop recording. We'll talk for another 5 minutes, and then we'll do a whole other episode.
Again. Yeah, why not?
I'm going to get you a week of content, you guys. It's going to be
episode
great.
Episode 102 is Bob here.
our guest for the next like 4 Word Bros episodes.
It's like, this idiot will not shut up. He was
whatever. It's nice not to have to talk so much, which is, you know, so.
Yes.
Yeah.
Bob, thank you so much. And again, April. It's coming out in April. Nightcrawler leads his team of X-Men, written by Cy Spurrier, who is fucking terrific. It is.
Agreed.
Way of X. Pick that up. Woo. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
that was Mr. Personality, Mr. Friendly Guy, Mr. Wonderful Dude, Bob Quinn. He was great.
Bob Quinn was awesome.
Yeah, he was really good, man. Check him out on social media, Robot JQ on Twitter. He don't go to his Instagram because he said he doesn't care about it anyway. So check him out. He did a really great job. His book is coming out with Cy Spurrier is amazing.
Cy Spurrier? Yes.
Yeah, Cy Spurrier is amazing. This book is coming out. It's an X book. Pick that up. It'll be out in April. And thank you so much to Bob. That was great.
Yeah, we had a great time talking to Bob. Yeah. There was a lot of laughter to be had in the episode. There's probably going to be a lot of editing of our combined laughter. So.
For sure. Edit, schmedit. But yeah, man. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll be back next week with Lana Kangas.
See, like Lana Kangas will be here.
I think she's Canadian. We'll have to ask her about that.
Is she?
I don't know.
Canadian, so I don't know. She is.
I've heard a rumor that she's Canadian. I'm not sure if it's true or not, but I guess we'll find out.
She's
next
like
week.
The Rush of comic book artists. Like, she's, you know, you love Rush. Everybody loves one Rush song. There's at least one Rush song.
Yeah, she's one of the hottest acts in the business, baby. So yeah. So next week, Lana Kangas will be on the show. We'll get to the bottom. Of if she's Canadian or not. So we'll be back. Thank you. Right. You're listening to the Word Bros Podcast, thewordbros.com.